You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Unabashedly Wisconsin News at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. 7:06, nice to have you along on this Monday, September 30th. I feel like we're supposed to be doing something here, Greg. It's the last day of September. Isn't there some guy we're supposed to be waking up?
Yeah, I did that before I left this morning. I left him a little note on his, a little post-it note on his forehead.
The guy from Green Day?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, hey, September's ending.
Yeah, wake up. Get it together, okay. Buddy. You've got an election coming up.
Got it. All right, good. Thank you for that. Coming up this hour, while Donald Trump and friends try to motivate people using fear, it seems like most voters are still going to make up their minds using the real world in front of them. Politicians who actually have plans to improve the lives of children and families and the economy. And we will talk to State Senator Kelda Royce about the issues important to those who want to vote for something. And Civic Media News Director Terry Bell has three things you need to know to start the week. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is still with us for a couple of more minutes. Going to visit with Selena Heller and her story about IVF from a dad's point of view. But first on this Monday morning, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here to tell us about a forecast that is summertime gorgeous for one more day. And then it's more like it's like fall gorgeous. There's not like some big, big drop off in terms of like a nasty stormy front is coming through. It's nothing like that at all.
No, it's going to be actually pretty peaceful as we transition out of our summery vibe, which we're going to have once again today after coming off a gorgeous, wonderful, beautiful weekend. We're going to continue that today with a ton of sunshine out there, mid-70s north, near 80 degrees further south in the state. And of course, we're going to see some breezes too, getting a little feisty further south in the state, gusting up to about 20 miles per hour. But other than that, we have that cold front moving through, and you're going to need some flannels or a jacket, a whole different wardrobe as soon as tomorrow. So we will be into those upper 50s north to mid-60s south, and we're going to hold on to that and stay cooler for the week because we do have another cold front pushing in. Got a couple of them. They're going to start to really reinforce the fact that, yes, we're in fall.
We are. And so we lucked out in terms of, Hurricane Helene as it came ashore. Yeah. And I mean, by ashore, I mean way inland. Ashland, yeah. North Carolina, near the Tennessee border. 400 miles inland, something like that. It's at 2,000 feet above sea level. And it's wiped out. It is wiped out by a hurricane. So, Brittany, I think, again, anybody that's saying, well, this is just a phase, when we talk about stronger storms and things like that, we're not messing around.
No, we're not. I mean, the atmosphere is so much warmer. It's got more moisture in it, which means it's got so much more to work with, which is why we're seeing so much heavier rainfall. And, that system slowed down. I mean, it was a huge system. It was one of the 14th largest hurricane that we've ever had actually do something like that. And the way it just sat there and dumped, I think it was 25 to 30 inches into portions of North Carolina. I mean, search and rescue still ongoing. Those numbers of the death toll on the rise. I mean, it's crazy to see that the highest toll of missing people and deaths is from North Carolina. Then it's, yeah, South Carolina. Then it's Georgia. Then it's Florida. You would think it would be the opposite way, but it's not.
And no.
It's a scary situation. And I mean, record surge made in Tampa. Well, I know we had the 15 feet above, obviously, in the Big Bend area, but to have the records being set that far away from it too, this thing was massive.
It really was. And this won't be the last of these.
No.
Good morning from Tigerton, says Rob. Clear and 48 this morning. I have mowing jobs in this beautiful weather. Mowing Saturday and took a ride around Shawano yesterday. Saw a traffic jam along Highway 29. Let's see. Notes that from our last segment, he had a crush on Marilyn McCoo when she was hosting Solid Gold back in the 1980s. And last but not least, I saw Kristen in her debate, and she did an excellent job. Living in the 8th Congressional District, I'm supporting Kristen. You have won the endorsement of Rob from Tigerton.
Congratulations. I'm a huge fan of Rob from Tigerton.
Can we watch that? Can we watch a debate like somewhere on like YouTube or something?
Yeah, I can post a link in our chat here, and if you want to put it out there, that would be great. We're also promoting just clips of it on my Twitter, and you'll see more on our social media in the week to come.
All right. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Selena, let's just jump right into things here while we've still got Dr. Lyerly talking about IVF from a dad's point of view. Tell us about the person that you talked to, and then I want to ask Kristen about it briefly.
Okay. Peter Drummond and his wife, Jillian, they live in Madison. And they were just living life and then, you know, busy with their jobs. And then they thought, hey, we were going to have kids. And then when they came to try to have kids, they couldn't. And they're like, well, we never thought this was going to be a problem. And then so I talked with Peter and he talked about all of the things that, you know, he wanted to do to be supportive of his wife, because of course he knows, you know, he knew he was going to have challenges through this journey, but of course, clearly hers were going to be a little more exacerbated, of course, going through the physical and emotional process a little bit more. So here is Peter talking about all of that with me.
Peter Drummond worked long hours and traveled for his job until he and his wife Jillian reached their mid-30s.
There was something missing, and that thing was kids.
So when they weren't able to conceive, the Madison couple turned to in vitro fertilization to have a family. Because IVF is an emotionally draining journey for a lot of couples across Wisconsin, Peter made a point to create his own support network.
I always tried to make sure I was not adding stress to my wife, who has to go through like the physical hardships of this, but making sure that, you know, I knew who my male friends were who went through this, so you can, you know, have a body of support.
And while Jillian bore the brunt of the stressful and psychologically exhausting process, Peter was frustrated that IVF was embroiled in politics.
So many of the folks that seem to have strong opinions on what women should be doing with their bodies are also the first to start beating the drums about personal freedoms. It's misogyny. It's men believing they should be making the decisions.
With Donald Trump's Project 2025 threatening access to IVF, Peter hopes future decisions to add to their family of now two little girls won't be stripped away.
Just looking at how full our lives are and like the joy with our daughters, the idea that someone would step in and say, nope, you're done. This decision's taken away. These medical decisions are taken away from you. It would be devastating. Having my girls is like, it's life changing. I cannot imagine life without them.
There's Selena's report. And Kristen, again, you work with a lot of moms, but it also means you work with a lot of partners, a lot of dads-to-be who are really getting more tuned in, not just to what an arduous journey this is, but how it could be tainted by politics.
The infertility journey is an incredibly difficult path for families. It's physically grueling for women. It's emotionally grueling for both partners and often the people in their circles as well. And I think it's important to note that 2% of babies in the U.S. are born from IVF. So this is not a small number. There are people in my life who are very close to me who are IVF babies and whose parents had to go through that. This is something that we need to support. This is how we grow families and grow communities. And this is just one more place where we can't tolerate political interference in our personal health care decisions.
And it just seems, I'm not quite sure if it's the status in your race, but in a lot of races, there's a lot of push for Republican candidates to just give a straight answer. I mean, Alabama Senator Katie Britt was on one of the Sunday morning shows and again, could not give a straight answer to just supporting IVF unequivocally.
They can't, because they've been back and forth. I mean, we've heard Donald Trump say he supports it, he's against it. We've seen the Republicans vote against it repeatedly. They're just trying to tell you something that they think you want to hear instead of the truth. And that is where they've just gone so far astray. Listen to the people who are talking to you like a human being. They're going to be your leaders, and they're going to be the people who are going to advocate for you.
Yeah, it is. Just pay attention to who's actually an advocate for you versus empty promises. Kristen, thanks as always. Another busy week ahead of you. We'll talk to you a little later on.
Thanks. Got to go take my little guy to school for the last time.
Oh, such a proud mom. Such a happy mom. Freedom.
Both. Have a great day, friend.
Nice. All right. You too.
See you later. So, Selena, in talking to Peter and, you know, other folks involved in IVF, do you get that same sense, this growing awareness that, you know, is actually making an already stressful situation more so?
Well, of course, he said, you know, he didn't need any more. It's hard enough to have access to all of this. And he said, you know, politicians don't need to be involved in this. This is between a woman and her doctor, of course, or a couple and her doctor. But you just don't need any more problems. It's difficult enough. And then, like Dr. Lyerly said, it's so common. And we should be putting more resources into figuring that issue out instead of taking away access. And so he said, you wouldn't believe when he started talking to his friends, how common this was. So many people have had this in their lives, and this should be talked about more and just become more commonplace for people just to have normal conversations. And he said, you know, he wanted his relatives to know, like, your niece or your so-and-so, your cousin, your relative, whatever, was born from IVF. So don't say anything weird. And this is what happened. And this is how we have these children, be it little Beatrice and Charlotte. So it's just, he is very passionate, of course, about talking about all of this.
Well, what's at the root of all this is conversations. In light of the Dobbs decision, you saw conversations like never before. We certainly started those with Dr. Lyerly of, look, here are all the different things that abortion care is for these situations that you might never have thought about because we never talk about them. So let's talk about them. And the same is happening now with IVF. Like, it's more common than you think. Again, it's just something people don't typically talk about. And now, thankfully, there's more people saying, we need to have this conversation so that you understand its prevalence and what's at stake. And again, that's a positive development, although, as Kristen has told us previously, it's unfortunate that nobody should feel obligated to talk about these things, but now you kind of have to.
Right. And that's exactly what he said. He said, I feel obligated to talk about this because it isn't being talked about and we need to talk about it more. And that's what his exact words to me. And he said, I also feel obligated to share my story because others did with me. And that gave me the confidence to also go through this and want to have this conversation so much more.
All right. The show continues to peel off moms who have to take kids to school. So Selena Heller is going to do the same as well. Thanks for the update on the story. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. See you later.
I have a great day.
You too.
When we'll come back, we'll unpack more of the headlines. We'll talk a little sports as well. And then in just a little bit, State Senator Kelda Royce will be with us to talk more about some of the issues we just covered and things about the economy, affordability issues for families who are frankly not that caught up in the fear mongering over immigration. They're looking for good jobs, good pay, good health care, and people that can proactively do that without having to demonize others. That's coming up. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Monday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota, on the Civic Media Radio Network. This was the number one song 50 years ago today, 1974, Rock Me Gently by Andy Kim. Yep, this is what the mid-70s sounded like, just in case there was any doubt.
You're like, how do we make this song more 70s? I know. Pew, 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 pew.
Yep. We've got the latest in keyboard technology that we're bringing to this tune. And big hair. Look at that.
This
album cover, Andy Kim. I've had the exact same hairstyle since 1979, and the 1979 photo of this, 79 through 87, 88, just, it is so much bigger.
Yes.
It's like I have a football helmet on, you know.
Folks, go to YouTube to type in Pat Kreitlo 1982 weather report, and you'll see how he went from 5'11" to 6'4" in the
80s. Just with the hair. It was the big 80s. It was called the big 80s for a reason. 7:22 now in sports. The Brewers lost yesterday in the regular season finale to the New York Mets. Final score was 5-0. But still, The Brewers finish with a record of 93 wins, 69 losses, so better than last season, even after all the loss of a manager and a general manager and an MVP player and two-star pitchers and so on. They finished 10 games ahead of the Cubs and the Cardinals. Just an amazing season. Now, what's next for the Brewers? It depends on a doubleheader that's being played today in Atlanta between the Braves and the Mets. So the Mets and Braves had two games washed out last week as the hurricane was first approaching. And so they're being made up as a doubleheader today. So the Mets flew from Atlanta to Milwaukee, now back to Atlanta for the doubleheader. Very simply put, if there is a sweep of the doubleheader today by either club, the Mets or the Braves, they're in, and they will go to San Diego to play the Padres. And then the team that loses both games is out. Arizona's in, and Arizona will be in Milwaukee tomorrow for a game. But if there's a split in the doubleheader today, if whichever team wins one and the other wins one, Arizona's out. And the way the tiebreakers are set up, it's the Mets that will come right back to Milwaukee for a game tomorrow. So again, if the doubleheader is a split, we get the Mets here tomorrow. If the doubleheader is a sweep by either team, we get Arizona here tomorrow. And then the playoffs will get underway. Packer quarterback Vikings quarterback Sam Darnold threw three touchdown passes as the undefeated Vikings built an early 28-point lead and hung on down the stretch, barely, to beat the Packers 31-29. The Packers had four turnovers, two missed field goals. Aaron Jones had said he would do a Lambeau leap into the stands if he scored a touchdown. He never did reach the end zone on Sunday. But still, after the game was done, he leaped into a section of Vikings fans in the stands on his way to the locker room. A nice homecoming for him. The Packers will be in L.A. to play the Rams next Sunday. That's a late game, 3:25, and it is again on CBS. So CBS next Sunday, 3:25 at L.A., taking on the Rams. The Badgers lost at USC. They will be hosting Purdue on Saturday this week. Donald Trump was in Prairie du Chien. Just a lot of rambling, racist ranting, calling for essentially either a purge or just a really violent day or a violent hour, he said, you know, where police could do anything and that would take care of all of our crime problems. I don't know. You could refer to it as a night of broken glass. You know, you could give it a German sounding name as a way to say, you know, if we could just have one night to go after these enemies that we've been, you know, dehumanizing, that will solve all of our problems. I don't think there's anything like that in the history books, right, that would indicate otherwise. But that's the kind of rhetoric we're getting from Trump now. But we're also getting the personal attacks, which, again, are getting some Republicans to recoil and to say Trump's going too far. That's not going to stop him. Here's what he had to say about Kamala Harris. And again, this is a person running for president of the United States.
Crooked Joe Biden became mentally impaired, sad. But lying Kamala Harris, honestly, I believe she was born that way. There's something wrong with Kamala. And I just don't know what it is, but there is definitely something missing. And you know what? Everybody knows it.
So that's his move, is to say everybody knows it. And he's hoping to sell you on it. He loves that bandwagon approach. But it raises a couple of interesting points. I mean, even Colin Jost could joke about it on Weekend Update over the weekend. Well, so you're going to call somebody mentally impaired, and yet you got your butt handed to you by Kamala Harris in the debate. So you're admitting you got beat by somebody with a mental disability? Which, of course, isn't the case. And he knows that. He just knows that going for, you know, the full-on personal insult is going to appeal to a crowd that then started chanting, we want, or we need Trump, we need Trump, we need Trump. And it is just the personal insults that, again, he hopes indicate that he is some kind of, you know, of a strongman. But again, the dark rhetoric isn't sitting well with everybody. You have, once again, some Republicans. Certainly you have advocates for, you know, for people with mental disabilities saying, oh, he shouldn't do this. He's going too far. But again, the amount of Republican elected officials who are saying this is too far and I'm going to endorse Kamala Harris is still ridiculously small. It is still growing. There is a growing list of former aides to Trump or to George W. Bush or to other Republicans. And I can certainly see how that's going to grow with his rhetoric, because his rhetoric is going to get even darker. The lies are going to get bigger. The amount of fear-mongering is only going to grow. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of concern that this is going to lead to more violence of one kind or another, you know, including violence, you know, built out of retribution that you saw in attempted assassinations. But again, it all starts with the person who's doing personal insults and who's trying to dehumanize people who come to this country to stay safe, to work hard, and to raise a family. Many of them are going through the process of staying here legally, only to have J.D. Vance say, well, that's not good enough. If we still want to deport you, we will. So buckle up. We got a road ahead of us yet. And thankfully, State Senator Kelda Royce is going to help us refocus on some of the real issues next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Back on Up North News Radio now, just about 7:35. Good morning to some of the folks saying good morning to us on Facebook, including Casey there and Jennifer. Tony, of course, is saying what a time to be alive, as he writes in on YouTube from Ashland. Couldn't agree more. There's so many issues that we could be talking about in this campaign. Issues that apply much more directly to the everyday lives of American families and middle-class families here in Wisconsin. And here to talk to us about it now, State Senator Kelda Royce from the Madison area, who has been a continued fearless champion on these issues and many more. Senator Royce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Monday, Pat.
Nice to have you here. As a member of the Joint Finance Committee, you see firsthand all the ways that these different issues could be addressed. I've got 10 of them here. I don't know that we're going to get to all 10 of them, but I think in every case, you're going to be able to draw a clear distinction as to what either you have proposed in the legislature, you and your fellow Democrats, or from a national perspective, and what the Republican response has been. But rather than go through these 1 through 10, I just want to stay, you know, from that issue overall, from a 30,000-foot view on the topic of Wisconsin working families and affordability, cost of living, things like that. What are the kinds of things you're hearing in terms of what you think they want people like you to be working on?
Well, what I hear again and again are that people want to see well-funded public schools so that their kids are learning and well-prepared to enter the workforce. People need help with affordable childcare. We've had so many closures, I think over 70 closures just in August. And that means we've got tens of thousands of kids who need care that can't find it. And the people who do have care are forking out basically a mortgage payment every month to pay for care. People want their rights protected, voting rights, abortion rights, civil rights, LGBTQ equality. They don't want the government mucking around in that and making things worse. And people want us to take action on affordable housing. Because no matter where you live in Wisconsin, it has become increasingly unaffordable to buy a house, especially if you don't own one already. So we're really depriving a generation of Wisconsinites of the ability to build wealth in that way. I will say that on every single one of these issues, Democrats have concrete plans. We've got legislation. We've got really comprehensive plans at the state and federal level. And on every one of these issues, the Republican answer is just, nope, let's ban abortion.
Yeah, or let's just cut taxes for the very wealthy. Let's bring back the the corporate tax breaks from the 2017 bill. Let's put more money into voucher schools, for example. I want to come to the childcare one, though, because we've talked often about the need for it. Everybody gets that there's this crisis of accessible, affordable childcare. But I don't think we talk nearly enough about that there is something resembling a Republican counterproposal. And it, again, just centers around tax credits. And I believe also, like, you know, more kids in the class or younger people that are watching these classes, right. They actually did propose an alternative. And I feel like if more people knew what that was, they wouldn't think that, you know, that your Republican colleagues are being serious.
Right. I mean, I think if anybody has been in a daycare recently and they've seen, you know, 15 two-year-olds trying to go potty, wash their hands, and then get their snowsuits on, you would realize that the answer is not to add more two-year-olds to the classroom. The answer is to pay that teacher more than $13 an hour and make it a sustainable career. We know that 90% of brain development happens from birth to five, and yet that's when we invest almost nothing as a state government. In those years, those important early years, we could stop opportunity gaps before they even begin, just by making sure that every family who wants it has access to great, high quality early childhood education. The Republican proposal was basically deregulate childcare. And, you know, I am lucky enough to have wonderful childcare, but the last thing I want to do is drop my beautiful babies off at a place that, you know, the teachers are not well trained, that I'm not sure if it's safe, that it's not going to be enriching for them. And no parent should have to make that choice, especially based on how much money they earn, right? Education is a public good. Taking care of our children is a public good. And we need to be investing in that. Every dollar we're putting into childhood education is going to yield many, many, many dozens of dollars down the road in terms of improved outcomes. For young people as they become adults.
What do you think then when you hear somebody like J.D. Vance say that the real problem is that liberals want every daycare worker to have a 6-year college degree or something like that?
Well, I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I think the reality is 4 out of 5 people who have early childhood education degrees don't work in the field anymore because they can't afford it. They can't make a living wage. And that's unacceptable. You know, we should have parity between people who work in our schools in K-12 and people who do early childhood. There's no reason that you should be able to make more working at a gas station or working at a fast food restaurant, which are, by the way, also hard jobs. You know, anything in the service industry is challenging. But taking care of kids is an incredibly important job. And it is a high skill job. And we do want those people to understand child development, to be patient, to be loving, to know actually what they're doing. And, you know, if J.D. Vance wants to have an argument about that, great. I'll bet you, though, his kids go to a pretty fancy daycare.
What about from a tax standpoint where, again, I think your Republican colleagues are proposing one way to handle the tax code. You and your Democratic colleagues are looking at things like the earned income tax credit. How would you describe the difference in party approaches there?
Well, I think Republicans basically want to give the rich a free pass. You know, they want a flat tax so that a barber or a car mechanic or a teacher are paying the same amount, the same percentage of their income in taxes as the very wealthiest among us, as millionaires and billionaires. And of course, a lot of the wealth, you know, the income that's made by millionaires and billionaires is taxed at a much lower rate than actual work, than labor. I think that's the wrong approach. I mean, I think that a progressive tax system will allow everyone in our economy from the top to the bottom, from the middle out, to thrive. And I think we've seen that, you know, writ large over the last 60 years. If you look at the performance of the economy under Democratic presidents and Democratic policies where you have progressive taxation, Bill Clinton said in his convention speech, 51 million jobs created over the last, you know, so many presidencies. I don't know if he said 40 years. 50 million of those 51 million jobs were created under Democratic administrations, right? So making sure that we are able to fund the progressive social infrastructure that all of us rely on roads and bridges and public education and transit and childcare, healthcare enables so much economic activity, and it lets everyone thrive. Even if you're working a low wage job, right? You should still be able to thrive. If you're working full time, you shouldn't be in poverty.
What kind of a difference maker would paid family leave be? Not only for the families, but addressing things like the labor shortage and small businesses.
Paid family leave is huge. It's huge. Right now, it's only available if you have an employer. And if you're a pretty high income white collar worker where you already probably have a little bit of a financial cushion and you might have more flexibility in your job anyway. Think about, you know, 6 weeks after you give birth, you are probably still healing. You're probably still bleeding and you're certainly exhausted from taking care of a newborn. But when you think about it, it's not just about support for newborns, although I will note that there is no state that has an abortion ban that also has paid family leave. It's a complete different approach. It's also about what happens if you get, you know, a cancer diagnosis. What happens if you have a loved one that's in an accident and needs some temporary care and support? All of us have, you know, we're only one bad diagnosis or accident away from needing a break and needing to be able to focus on ourselves and our health and our well-being to recover from surgery or whatever it is. And we should be able to do that without threatening our economic stability or getting fired from our job. If we make paid family leave universal and not tied to, you know, having the right job, we're going to unleash so much more economic activity. We're going to allow the labor force to be able to move between jobs. We let people start small businesses and become entrepreneurs because they know that they'll at least have that safety net. And we'll let small businesses compete with bigger businesses. So it's just a win-win-win proposition. And that's why every other developed nation has, and a lot of the developing countries have already guaranteed paid family leave. Wisconsin, I mean, the United States is a total outlier in that.
Well, then there's the area where Wisconsin is nearly a total outlier, and that is on Medicaid expansion of care for women who are postpartum, which is currently 6 weeks. There's the option to make it 12 months worth of stable, affordable coverage for women who are postpartum. And Senator Royce, we're down to two states, I believe. I believe it's just us in Arkansas, or it will be soon, that aren't covering that.
Yeah, really, really shameful in a state where abortion was completely unavailable for over a year and a half that the Republicans blocked the expansion of Medicaid for you know, women who were giving birth and basically kicking them off their coverage after just a few weeks. And, you know, this is something that the federal government basically pays for as part of the Affordable Care Act. You know, when people have access to healthcare, it enables them to work. It enables them to care for their children. It enables them to participate in society. Right now, because we haven't not just expanded postpartum coverage, but we haven't expanded Badger Care completely, it's making our workforce shortage much worse because it means that people have to turn down a 50-cent an hour raise that they could really, really desperately use because they will lose their health insurance. They will be over that benefits cliff, even though they're still making poverty wages. It's not enough to live on. It means people have to turn down picking up an extra shift and, you know, can't help out their coworker or get a little bit of extra money for the holidays. And so that is the real economic impact of failing to take this federal money. Not to mention, it means that state taxpayers are on the hook to actually pay billions of dollars more for covering fewer people. That is the effect of not taking the federal Medicaid money.
Exactly. And then, you know, again, if you want to be, you know, a so-called abortion ban state, then maybe, you want to make sure to reduce the incidence of unintended pregnancies. But, I mean, even something that we would like to think is as basic as birth control and IVF care, things like that continue to be imperiled by what we're the rhetoric we're hearing from candidates on the trail.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to point out that we had standalone votes in both the state Senate and the state assembly on protecting us, creating a statutory right to birth control. This is after Dobbs, just this spring. We said, regardless of what happens with the U.S. Supreme Court, we want Wisconsinites to know that they have a right to birth control, to access contraception, and that they have a right to access IVF and fertility treatments. And you know what, Pat? Every single Senate and Assembly Republican, everyone voted against both of those standalone votes. So that tells you everything about where they are. You know, these are this is a party that has been so captured by the most extreme elements of their party that they are willing to say, we don't support a right to birth control, we don't support a right to IVF, and we're going to continue voting in favor of these draconian, horrific abortion bans that don't have exceptions and that, you know, force women to give birth.
And by the way, in terms of going backwards, the Harris-Walz campaign early this morning put out a report based on J.D. Vance, once again, talking about, you know, why don't we just have high-risk pools instead? To which I love Tim Walz's comeback. Like, does he not know how insurance works? I mean, we have tried this. And right. the report from the Harris-Walz campaign this morning notes a figure that has been used plenty here in Wisconsin, that if we actually went backwards the way Vance is talking, we'd end up with something like, what, 2.4 million people in Wisconsin with pre-existing conditions who would just up and lose their coverage.
Right. Yeah, like literally every one of us has somebody very close to us that has a pre-existing condition. You know, health insurance is something that makes the rest of life possible. If you can't go to a doctor when you're sick, it's going to cost you much, much more. And it's going to cost all of us who do have, are lucky enough to have private insurance more. It makes absolutely no sense to do it. And to say nothing of the morality of in one of the richest countries in the world, letting people die because they couldn't get to a doctor.
Yep. And that's why you have so many people saying, we're not going back. Senator Kel DeRoy is being one of them. Kelda, thank you so much. Great to talk to you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
All right. Terry Bell's up next with three things you need to know. After this, you're up north. Terry Bell is with us now, Civic Media's news director, to talk about three things you need to know before we get the week started. And actually, we're going to start with one of the things that's not on there, Terry, because, I mean, item number one, of course, is that the presidential race is tightening in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess a subhead to that would be that makes tomorrow's vice presidential debate all the more important for people who consider themselves able to vote on either side of the fence here, which is going to involve a couple of handsome men on your radio tomorrow.
That's right. You and I, we're going to be co-hosting the vice presidential debate on, as they say, many of these Civic Media radio stations. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. What time does coverage begin?
The debate itself is 8, so yep. 7:45.
7:45, okay. I will be there. Might be in my footy pajamas. It's getting, you know, close to bedtime, but I will be there.
We appreciate the extra effort.
Yeah, so when we say the presidential race is tightening in Wisconsin, evergreen reminder, we're a battleground state. We're one of those purplest to purple states. So mm-hmm. if you need information on voter registration, other election information, go to myvote.wi.gov. But Terry, yes, it is very much still a battleground here.
A 2-point race, according to the New York Times and Siena College. They came out with a poll over the weekend, well within the margin of error, of course. And, you know, it just goes to show, especially... the race has tightened since 7 weeks ago. So any bump that Kamala Harris got after her debut as the nominee seems to have pretty much, been countered just by natural events in right. a campaign. As we get closer, things do tend to tighten. So not surprising, perhaps, but, you know, it just goes to show how narrow. In fact, there was one statistic I came across this morning that I thought was four of the last six Wisconsin presidential races have been decided by 1 point or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So kids, get out there and vote. And by the way, we hear this about down ballot races all the time that, I mean, yeah, again, in Wisconsin, less than a percentage point, you're still talking about thousands of votes, but it translates into legislative races and local races where the margin can be hundreds or dozens of votes or less. So go do that. It's why the candidates have been coming here as often as they have. We've been seeing a lot of Vice President Harris and Minnesota Governor Walz and J.D. Vance. Donald Trump's getting on the road a bit more often. That included Prairie du Chien this past Saturday, but he's not done with Wisconsin yet.
No, in fact, he's going to be going to Wanakee tomorrow as well as Milwaukee. It's notable that he's going to Wanakee. This will be Trump's first visit to Dane County. And Trump, in his past runs for president, has kind of avoided Dane County, written it off as too much of a Democratic bastion to even bother. But top Republicans in Wisconsin have been urging Trump to campaign in Dane County, acknowledging that they will probably lose Dane County, but they feel that there are enough potential Republican votes, enough potential Trump votes in Wisconsin to cut into that margin in a bit that may help Trump carry Wisconsin.
All right. And so, again, look for more visits. We're not done seeing any of these folks by any stretch of the imagination. And as we covered with Brittany Merlot earlier this hour, with Hurricane Helene then becoming a tropical storm and moving ashore, the damage is just heartbreaking. And, and many times the precip would have wound up this far, but we've been stuck under this big old high pressure system that has kept it away. But it has led to a lot of misery in places that don't normally get impacted this hard by a hurricane.
And that's just thing. You know, there are places in the country where people accept hurricanes as a possibility and are prepared for them. And in fact, buildings are built to withstand them as best I can. But what's different about this storm, it is hitting parts of the country where people are just not prepared. More than 100 people have died now is the latest official count. In Asheville, North Carolina alone, 30 people have died. Too many roads washed out to count, which is making relief efforts all that more challenging. So there are a lot of people we're not hearing from right now who are stranded and in a pretty bad way, I imagine.
And it just, unfortunately, and again, this is not for the sake of political humor, but you have to share it anyway, that there are far too many elected officials who have talked about cutting budgets, who have voted against emergency aid in the past for other places until it affects their state. And then again, you get the jokes about, Ron DeSantis saying, calling up Joe Biden and saying, hi, I'd like to borrow a cup of socialism, please, because, it's somebody else's problem until it's yours. And now, without a doubt, we're going to see the disaster declarations. And Terry, we're probably going to see some people voting no on aid from other parts of the country, which baffles me, but it seems to have become a way of life in our politics.
Yeah. These things get politicized until they, as you mentioned, affect you, and then they become important. That's an excellent point.
Yeah. All right. Well, next week, we're going to finally start getting you on the hook here for being responsible for the fortunes of the Badger women's volleyball team, because they're 7th ranked in the country now. I think they're 7-4.
Probably slip. They had an up and down week. They lost a heartbreaker to Minnesota on Wednesday, and then had a nice confidence builder sweeping Northwestern on Saturday. Charlie Furbringer, our freshman setters, started a new tradition. She turned a cartwheel on her way off the court down in Evanston Saturday night. She says she's going to do that after every win now.
She's totally copying me and Greg. We were going to start doing that today. We were going to do cartwheels at the end of the show.
I guess we're not going to do that now. I guess we'll just go back to saying goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, well, saves us the trouble. All right, Terry Bell, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Aaron Air, where they will be talking about...
Oh, all the news of the day, talking about the election. At 10:33, Lee McGowan, also known as I Am Politics Girl on social media, will be joining us for an interview.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Have a great show. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you.
And again, we appreciate having all of you along. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Tomorrow, Hans Breiten Moser, Sherita Booker, Christina Lurie, and White House domestic advisor Neera Tanden. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a wonderful Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.